Okay, so welcome everybody. The shiur tonight is going to be on the Gemara on Baba Kama, Samach Amar Aleph. It's about, it basically, it's a little bit about Chazal, different Chazal's takes on Magefa, or punishment which comes to the world. Okay, and there's some interesting things, and it kind of connects up with Makas Bechoros, which is the Magefa, so we'll see what the Gemara has to say. Now, just a welcome everyone who comes. I ordinarily give a shiur on Tuesday night, and this is actually, I guess, an extended version of it. But basically, the shiur that I typically give is somewhat of a laboratory, if you will, which means it's like interactive. It's not quite like a, like maybe more akin to a Sunday shiur. It's more of like a give and take, back and forth. So hopefully we'll be able to replicate that despite the larger crowd. But that's what I hope to do. I like that. That's the style of this year. So we'll see how it goes. Okay. I just figured I might as well open up to a larger crowd, given that people are home. And okay, so the Gemara is like this: it's Baba Kama Samach Amar Aleph. Okay, Samach Amar Aleph, and it says as follows: it's towards the bottom. Towards the bottom, it's. I guess you could say it's about like 8 to 10 lines from the bottom. Kamashmal is the first word in the line. Amar of Shimon bar Nachmeni, Amar of Yonathan. Ein paranas ba'ala olam, ela bizman shaharashayim ba'olam. Okay? So paranas, like payment or payback, punishment, doesn't come to the world, but in a time when there are rasha'im in the world. Okay? It means, I guess, the thing, Hashem doesn't punish the world, or punishment doesn't come to the world, but for a time when there are Rasha'im in the world. Okay? Ve'ena maschelas elemen ha-tzadikim tchila. However, despite the fact that it only comes at a time when there are Rasha'im, it begins, it doesn't begin, but with tzadikim first. Strange, surprising. The thing is, again, it only occurs because of Rasha'im, or at a time when there were Rasha'im around, but yet this Puranas, this punishment to the world, begins from Tzadikim. Okay? And how does the Gemara know this? So it says, Shanamar, and it's going to be Dorish HaPasuk, which is talking about an entirely different topic. This is a Drasha, it's not the Pshat in the Pasuk, but it's a Drasha, which is a Pasuk, and this is the Sigya across the Sigya, I'm learning the Sigya with Rabbi Zimmer, it's the Sigya of Eish, which basically means if a person lights a fire in their own field, for example, and the fire catches to, let's say, thorns and thistles, and it spreads, and it goes into the next person's yard, and it burns down his gedish, his stack or his haystack or his stack of wheat or whatever it is, his pile of produce, so then the person who lit the fire is obligated to okay, and that's the pasuk says, ki seitze eish umatza kotzim. If a person, a fire goes out and finds the thorns, v'nechal gadish, and it eats like a pile of food, and so on and so forth, you chayav to pay. So the drasha is, that has nothing to do with magefa or anything, but but at the same time it says like this, that the drasha is, ki seita esh umasa kotzim. When a fire goes out and finds thorns, emasa esh yotza, when does a fire go out, is man shekotzim mitsuyama. At a time when there are thorns around. So it's a drasha. Eish is referring to, like, let's say, a plague or something of that sort, some sort of punishment to the world. And it says, and a fire goes out and finds thorns, and thorns are a metaphor for Rasha'im. And it's saying is, when does a fire go out? Ki seis eish, umata kotzim. A fire goes out and finds thorns. So the saying is, it must be, fires go out when there are thorns around. So, too, it's saying is, a punishment to the world only occurs when there are Rasha'im, who are likened to thorns. And then it says, Ve'ena maschelas elam el tzadikim tchila, yet, when the punishment occurs, it begins with the tzadikim. How do you know that? So the pasuk says, Shenevenecha gadish. Okay, it says, the fire goes out, and it finds thorns, and it consumes a pile of food, a gadish, was eaten. So it should have said, v'achal gadish, and it eats a pile of thorns. Why does it say, v'ne'achal gadish, and the was eaten, implying in the past tense? Sh'ne'achal gadish kvar. It's teaching you that it means the gadish was eaten, consumed prior. And whatever that means, it's funny how that works in the case of a fire, but the metaphor is that even though the fire, the plague that is, or the punishment which is occurring in the world, is only occurring because there are Rishayim in the world, at the same time, somehow, gets the tzaddikim first. Okay, the Kaddish comes first. The Kaddish is the good, not the thorns. The Kaddish is the food, the produce, which in this case the metaphor is the tzaddikim. So the thing is, they are smitten, I guess you could say, first. Okay, which is strange, hard to understand. If the whole punishment is for, on behalf of the Rishayim, you could ask altogether, why are tzaddikim being punished in the first place? And then even if you want to say somehow they are being punished in the first also, but it only starts with the tzaddikim, that seems puzzling, right? That seems puzzling, right? And the statement itself is interesting. It's saying is punishment only happens to the world in a time when there are Rishayim in the world. I mean, you'd think that might seem obvious. It might seem obvious. But I guess it's some sort of a Chiddush which is teaching us. Okay, let me just read a little bit further because there's a parallel. This is a statement of Rav Yonasan, but there's a parallel statement of a Braisa, or a parallel statement of Rav Yosef, which is very similar. And maybe by taking the two of them together, we'll be able to gain some more insight. So it says, Ma'idah Siv, what does the Pasuk say? Va'atam lo seisu ish mi Pesach beisu ad boker. So this is by Makas Bechoros. And the Jews, when they did the Korban Pesach, they did it in their house, in their homes. And they put the blood on the doorposts of the doors. And the Torah says, Hashem warned them, don't go out of the door of your house until morning. Why can't you go out of the doorway of your house until morning? So the Gemara explains, Kivan Shenitein Rishus L'Mashchus, once there's permission given to the destroying agent, whatever, Eino Mavchin Bein Tzadikim L'Rishayim. It doesn't differentiate between Tzadikim and Rishayim. And since this night was a night of destruction, even though seemingly Makas Bechoros only occurred at midnight, but it seems that Ramban says maybe it means along with Makas Bechoros, sometimes there's when there's death around, there's plagues which go around, and there are destructive agents which go around together with death. And it's saying is, since this night is a dangerous night, he's saying is, every person, every Jew shouldn't leave their house. The Jews are the tzaddikim, the Jews are the good people. What's the big deal if they leave the house? Is the destroying agent going to get the Jew? The Jews are the tzaddikim, the mitzvah of the Rishon. So it's teaching you, no. Once God gives permission to the destroyer to destroy, it doesn't differentiate between tzaddikim and Rishayim. And therefore, Hashem is warning the Jews, don't leave your home this night. Okay? So that's a general principle. It's deriving from here that when a permission is given to a destroying agent, for example, a plague, a virus is given, it doesn't differentiate between tzaddikim and Rishayim. Below Od, the Gemara continues, not only that, El Hashem Maskel Min HaTzadikim Tzeiwa. It begins with Tzadikim. Okay, it begins with Tzadikim first. Shenema, it's a Pasuk in Yechezkel, Echrati Mimcha, and I'll cut off from you, Tzadik V'Rasha. It doesn't say Rasha V'Tzadik, it says Tzadik V'Rasha, implying that the punishment is going to get the Tzadikim before the Rishayim. Okay, so again, two points. First of all, the Onesh doesn't differentiate between Tzadik and Rasha. It's hard to understand. Why not? Shouldn't it? After all, the Tzadik is the Tzadik, the Rasha is the Rasha. But despite that, it doesn't. Now it starts with the Tzadik once again. So the Gemara says, Bachli Rav Yosef. When Rav Yosef heard this or said this, he cried. He cried. It's sad. What's so sad? Okay, it is sad. Why? Kule Ahai Nami Le'en Domin? In other words, so much so that the tzaddikim are like worthless? Rashi, kilomar, lahevel chashuv tzaddikim? Are the tzaddikim like nothing? They're like worthless? Shekodmim leparanos? That they're first? Are the tzaddikim really so bad, so nothing, that the paranos, the punishment starts with them? That's saddening. Sounds like he would have been okay if it didn't start with them. That's one thing. But so much so that it even starts with them? Right? That's what he's crying about. So the Gemara responds, Amar Le Abaye, and this is the last thing. Abaye said back to Rav Yosef, don't cry. Tivusehu le Gabayu. It's really a good for them. It's not a punishment to them that it starts with them. On the contrary, it's a benefit for them. It's a good for them. Because of the evil people, the tzaddik is destroyed. And Rashi explains, it's a good for the tzaddikim so that they're spared from witnessing the destruction which is going to come. So it's saying is, Rav Yosef, you thought it was saying the tzaddikim are gotten first is indicative of the fact that the tzaddikim are worthless and nothing. They're basically equal. Starts from them. So then Rav Abai is saying, no. They're not quite nothing. Yes, they're destroyed. They're punished as well. But they're not nothing. It starts with them is like a chesed to them that they don't have to witness the utter destruction which is about to occur. So it's starting from them is a good for them, not a bad for them. Okay, so that's basically the end of the Gemara. Okay? That's the end of the Gemara. So I'd like to take any questions. Okay, I'd like to analyze the Gemara, and in doing so, it's, I think, a good idea to take these types of Gemaras just to first, before we try to explain them and to give answers for what we think they mean, is sometimes to ask questions and elucidate the problems with it, and this way we'll be able to gain some insight of what we're trying to answer once we have an adequate list of questions. Okay?
Well, I see that. I just wanted to clarify. You started out by like implying that the Rashim are the Goyim and the Tzaddikim are the Jews. This, in a bunch of previous Shurim that we had, we kind of said that the world is punished from the Rambam based on the conduct of the Jews, and it starts off with the Goyim. And then also, like, necessarily, are we saying, I mean, could we be saying that there's Tzaddikim and Rashim amongst the Jews? Why we need to? I mean, are we like? Does this have any implication about going versus Jews?
Well, I think a good question. The reason I mentioned going and Jews is that the place it's learning it from, this example it's using is Mitzrayim, and in Mitzrayim it's saying is that a person shouldn't leave their house at night. The Jews shouldn't leave their house because once the permission is given for the Malach of the Mashlis to destroy the Mitzrim, it doesn't differentiate between the Mitzrim and the Jews. So in that instance, the Tzaddikim were the Jews, and the Rishayim were the Mitzrim. But that doesn't mean that that's always the case. And I think you're right. The point is well taken. Not necessarily Goyim versus Jews, but rather Tzaddikim versus Rishayim. Whether that's in the Jews or in the Goyim or whatever is a different discussion than whatever we said previously or whatever, you know. I'm not really getting into that. Okay, but the only reason I mentioned it is because in that one case of Makas Bechoros, it happens to be it was the Jews versus the guy. Okay?
Rabbi Seder?
Yes.
Hey, the question that jumped out at me is, if once the angel of destruction is released, they don't differentiate between Tzaddikim and Rasham, how can they then say that specifically starts with Tzaddikim, because I thought they can't differentiate?
Yeah, okay, that's a good question. Good question. Right. I mean, it sounds like it doesn't differentiate. That's it. It's just a force of nature. It's unleashed. And it doesn't differentiate. Now all of a sudden it does differentiate. Yeah, okay, that's a good question. I like that. Okay, good.
You're Rabbi Peter?
Yeah.
I'm not sure if you explained it, but the phrase Alabiz Manshar Rashayim Ba'olam is a bit of a peculiar phrase because pretty sure Rashayim have always been in the world since the beginning of history.
Right. I mean, it's just Koranas only comes to the world when there are Rishonim in the world. Right, you mean aren't there always Rishonim in the world? Yeah, okay, good question. Right, that's funny. Funny, okay, good.
So why is it good for Tzaddikim to always first, so they don't see everyone?
I guess they don't see the destruction.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, the way I understand that, of it being good for the Tzaddikim so they don't see the destruction, see, I don't know, you know, I don't think anyone feels that way now. This plague. I think it's like, as bad as this plague is, I think it's not as bad, and Mirat Hashem, it won't be as bad, it doesn't seem like it'll be as bad, as the really bad plague, like the Black Plague, for example, which killed a third of Europe. And, you know, like, this is deadly, and unfortunately, sadly, it is killing some people, and more than some, but it doesn't seem like it's wreaking havoc in the same way as, it's very contagious, and it could be dangerous for some people, but at the same time, I don't think it's anything like the, you know, maybe it has to do with modern medicine, and maybe it has to show the lethalness, lethality, or whatever, of this plague, as opposed to the Black Plague, or whatever. So I don't know that anyone at this point would think that if someone would pass away now, they'd be happy that they're not going to see the bad. But maybe if you think about the Black Plague or whatever, which is destroying Europe and destroying, killing people all over the place, and the hunger and the, you know, the terrible times, which I went on for, I think, for a long time, one might say it would be a kindness to take someone out at the beginning of the plague and not to have them suffer years of hardship and then only die afterwards. So in a certain sense, I would think that's what I mean. I think we have to think about that comment in the context of a very deadly plague, which really the world on many levels, you know? So that's what I say.
Right, Peter?
Better to go first than last, yeah?
I was just thinking that it's incredibly strange to me that we're using an example of where the Magefa, or once it's unleashed, can't tell a difference, where the name of the holiday is Pesach. Which implies that it actually differentiated between house to house, who had the carbon on the wall, who had the blood on the walls, and who didn't.
Yeah.
So isn't that a differentiation? I mean, I'm not.
Yeah, good question. Yeah, there's a Ramban on that pasuk, which is dealing with that. That's the problem with this whole thing. But I think the way the Ramban interprets it is the way it seems to me what the Ramban is saying, not 100% clear. But you can look at it if you want yourself. It's in Yud Beis, Tav Beis, and Tav Gimel. There are two Rambans. But he says, I'll just read you one little phrase. He says, Hamalach Hamashtes Ba'olam Ba'et HaNegef. The Malach, the Negef, the Mashtes, is the Malach which destroys in the world at the time of the Negef. And he quotes the Pasuk. Lo Hamashtes B'Mitzrayim. But not the Mashtes B'Mitzrayim. Ki HaKadosh Baruch Hu HaMakah. So I think it means like there was two things on that night. There was Makas B'Choros itself, and that was Achatzos. That wasn't the whole night, that was just Chatzos. But then, like, once there's death throughout Mitzrayim, it creates maybe like a wave of danger in general. There's a malach, a mashlis, maybe there are germs, maybe there's bacteria, rotting bodies, I don't know. There's a secondary after effect, aftershock, if you will, which is, it's basically, given that there's so much death in the air in Mitzrayim, then the whole night is going to be dangerous to go out. And it's telling the Jews, if you go out, you might end up partaking of their, even though the Hashem jumps over the houses of the Jews, but still, if you're going to go out until the morning, if you're going to go out, you might partake of the danger of the mashlis, you know, as well. So it seems to be taking that as a lesson for, you know, mashlises in general. Even though the basic first element, what makes this whole thing happen, is, of course, Pesach, where Hashem does skip over. How does that work, Ari?
Well, I mean, it's something, but it still, it seems, I mean, the warning seems that if you go outside, you're going to be part of the Makkah. I mean, that's...
Yeah,
that,
it sounds that way, but that's the problem, you know. It sounds that way, but that's not the way this Chazal seems to be taken, you know. But maybe
yep.
That's flame
okay.
Shot. Maybe that is flame shot. I hear that. And there is a way to learn that look, your Makkah Bechoros, and you're the only reason you're spared from Makas Bechoros is because you're in the Jewish home, and you're doing the mitzvot, and you stay in your microcosm, if you will, within Mitzrayim, the Jewish house within Mitzrayim. And if you're outside, then the Makas is going to get you. Yes, that's a good shot. But I don't
right,
think
but if you do that shot, that takes care of, then you have this question about differentiation. So,
So that's what I'm saying. I think that might be pshat in the psukim, but I don't, or at least a pshat in the psukim. But it seems like this Chazal, which is saying, being Dorish, that, you know, in a mouth of Insavika Rasha, it seems like it's not going that way. Because Makas Bechoros isn't quite that type of a Makkah. And since Bechoros is Hashem, he's not even using it. That's not my problem, Makas Bechoros. On the one hand, it says, Kadosh Baruch Hu Ba'atzmo V'chvodo Lo Lidei Malach Lo Lidei Sarah. And then it says, Lo Yitin HaMashlis Lo Techo Lingo. Well, what do you mean? I thought there's no Mashlis. Right? So it's Tzarchian. It's an interesting thing to pursue, certainly, but that's not what I want to take up. But it's a good question. I'm kind of going with this Chazal, and I'm using the Ramban, because it seems like the Chazal are learning it not regarding the Makas Bechoros itself, but a Negev in general, and learning a universal limud here, whereas Makas Bechoros does seem to be a one-time, unique type of an event, Lo Yidei Malach. Okay, but good question. Good question. Okay? Someone else.
To answer David Fader, David Fishbein, sorry.
Oh, one second. Just I wonder if there are any other questions before we attempt to give answers.
Oh, no, just to answer this question.
Oh, his question. Okay, fine. Got it, Howie.
So it says after the Mabul, it says, with Doros Olam, when they're talking about the Kesha. So Rashi says the word Doros is spelled lacking.
Right.
That was love. He says, because there were, Refisha Tabikin Gemun Hoyu, Mo Doro Shel Chizkiyahu Mach Yehuda, and Doro Shel Ben Shem Ben Yochai.
Oh, I see. There are some generations which don't have any, right, which don't have any Roshayim. I hear what you're saying. And that those generations, it's saying, is then there won't be a Mash, Paranas in the world. Okay. Good, I hear you. Yeah, good point.
It's hard to understand, though, because Reb Shimon Bar Yochai had to run away.
Sure.
And Hizkiyahu Melch Yehuda was fighting a war, so.
Nice thing.
That's what Rashi says.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, good point. Where's that, by the Kesha? Okay.
Gracious test. Good day.
Okay, great. Thank you. Okay. Okay, any other questions on Ms. Gemara? It's also funny. I'll tell you what's bothering me. One other thing which is bothering me. I mean, of course, there's the basic questions. What's the sense? What's the idea of saying that the pranas only comes, the bad only comes when there are sham in the world? What's the idea there? Then what's the idea that it starts with tzaddikim? And what is it, just so the dialogue is a little interesting, because originally Rav Yosef cried, because he says, so much so, that it treats the tzaddikim as nothing, right? Well, what do you mean it treats them as nothing? It's not treating them as nothing, it's going for them first, right? I mean, that's what it says. It says that not only is it starts from the tzaddikim, right? Not only is it not malchim, but it starts from the tzaddikim. So then why is he crying and saying, oh, so much so that they're like nothing? It's not they're nothing. I mean, on the contrary, it's that they're worse than nothing, it would seem, or something. And then my answer is no, it's for their benefit. But, fine, I understand the answer is it's for their benefit. But how did he understand it? Before he understood that it was for their benefit, then what was he thinking? That it was going for them first, and so much so that they're nothing? That's not nothing. Like, what was, it was like a dialogue there. It would be interesting if we could understand how was he interpreting what the Gemara thought, and then what was the, you know, his problem, his crying, and then what was the Gemara's answer? Yeah, is that question clear? Yeah. Okay. So let's start at the beginning. I don't have an idea, so let's start with the first part. It says, Paranas doesn't come to the world but in a time when there are Rasham in the world. So what does that mean? Let's ignore the other part about the Tzaddikim first, and let's just start with that. Okay, what's the lesson, the idea, which that's teaching us? Kronos doesn't come to the world, but in a time when there are Rasham in the world. What's that? It's hard to hear. Somehow the sound isn't good. Someone's talking, I think.
Baba Seder.
Yeah.
I was thinking we always have a general principle at the meetup. And we have another principle of Bechira.
Okay.
So I was wondering if the Tzaddikim weren't around, and only the Rishayim got hit with the Magefa.
Okay.
So that would, in essence, it would be like HaKadosh Baruch Hu sending down a lightning bolt.
Okay.
and people would see that there's a Magepha and all these Rishayim are being destroyed. So they would change their ways and humble themselves in front of the Kadosh Baruch Hu because of the fear of the lightning bolt. Now that the tzaddikim are taken to task first, so it people recognize that there's Magepha going on, and they look to see that the tzaddikim are also being harmed. So that, in essence, will give the Hamon Am, either the Jews or everybody in general, it will give them the opportunity to do a true tshuva that will take away the Magepha, because not, they're saying that there's something strange going on, and look, even tzaddikim and Rishayim are being treated equally. The other part of the theory is the lightning bolt theory.
Right.
If people see lightning bolt theory, they're going to change,
right. But
not because of free will, right. But because of fear. And that's not what a Kadosh Baruch Hu wants to accomplish.
Okay, I hear you.
Does that answer the question of why it includes tzaddikim first?
It does. I'm not asking that question yet, though. I want to take up first. I want to take it slow, okay? I like to take these things very slowly. So the first statement it says is that Haranus, bad comes to the world only at a time when there are Rishonim in the world. Okay? So I'm addressing that. That's the very first part of the statement. Okay, maybe that seems obvious, but I wonder what's the idea with that teaching?
I guess if there's only tzaddikim in the world, then there would be no reason to be for punishment to be imposed.
Okay, good, right. So that sounds, you might say that sounds obvious, right? Right? If there's no
right.
The punishment is for Rishayim. If there are a whole world with tzaddikim, so then, well, why would there be an onus? Of course, right? Punishment is good, excellent, right? Punishment is for Rishayim. But it does seem like the Gemara is trying to prove it. It's like deriving it from a pasuk by the fire and whatever. Is it obvious, or is there some, could one argue to the contrary? Is it possible to argue to the contrary? What's the, I think what you're saying is good, Larry, but is there more of a chiddush, if you will? Is there something novel to this, which I wouldn't necessarily bet?
Well, is the Gemara putting a responsibility on the tzaddikim that if a tzaddik was truly a tzaddik in every way, his behavior or her behavior would be a model for others, and there should not be any Rishayim. So is the tzaddik punished also?
Okay.
For failing to be exemplary enough.
Right.
So that there
perhaps.
Wouldn't be a Russia?
Right, perhaps. So a good direction. But again, let's start back at the beginning, but we'll get to that. That's the question of why it gets the tzaddikim as well, which is an important question, because there's a justice question there, which you're addressing nicely. But let's just go start from the first point. So if I would tell you, if a person doesn't die unless they're a Russia, would you say that that's true?
Nature.
You wouldn't necessarily say that, right? You'd say is that there are laws of nature. And it wouldn't seem to be a fair statement to say that bad things don't happen to a person unless he's a Rasha. A person doesn't die unless he's a Rasha. Because we know there's reward and punishment, but there are laws of nature. And people die. And like Chazal say, a person's length of their life and their money and their children is not contingent upon the person's tachus, their merits, but upon their mazel, their chance factor, as well as the nature. So one might argue, in fact, you know, some people have said such an argument regarding the current virus, is look, there's a natural thing called viruses, and there's maybe it's just happening, chance, right? Laws of nature. After all, there are laws of nature, and I'm sure there's a very good natural explanation for you know, the bats and Wuhan and mutation, whatever, right? Mutation and all that. And there's a nice, I'm sure, I don't know if they found it yet, but there is a good explanation for these things. So someone might say, look, the world is subject to the laws of nature, and maybe foreigners could happen to the world just by chance. Right? Just by chance. A person could die just by chance. So I think maybe that's what this is telling you. That's what Rabbi Yonatan's statement is saying is not the case. And this is that point that, again, Rabbi Shiri was mentioning this, is based on the mitzvah of an Esara to daven. That Torah, that might be the case by an individual. It might be the case that an individual could just suffer some type of a life-ending event or something to that effect based upon the laws of chance. And a person is subject to the laws of chance and isn't necessarily going to deserve imposition in those laws. But something which affects the olam, it sounds like it's saying is that if there's a piranus to the world at large, or I don't know exactly how large or how big a segment of the world, but piranus doesn't come to the world unless there's Rishon. Which means that Hashem doesn't leave the world up to chance in a way that there's going to be a piranus in a mass way insofar as there's no Rishon. If there's all tzaddikim in the world, and we were all at the highest level, then something like this couldn't occur. And if something like something which is piranus to the world occurs, that indicates that there are Rishon in the world. I don't know if it means, of course, like David's question originally. It doesn't mean that there's, of course, there's one Rishon in the world, but I think it means it indicates that there's Onesh. It indicates there's Rishon in the world. It means don't chalk up a massive event which occurs to the world, a piranus to the world, as just being laws of nature. While it might be, it does operate via laws of nature, of course, because, you know, there are vehicles. But if not for the fact that there was a fair amount of rishus in the world, then it wouldn't have occurred. God could have stopped it. And I remember talk a little bit about this point in this year also, is Kodesh Baruch Hu could stop these things. And even though there are laws of nature are under our God's control. And if we find ourselves in a circumstance where there is promise to the world, the lesson is that it's because of Rishayim, and therefore it's a call to do tshuva. Okay? You guys with me? Any questions?
Yeah, Ellie, Rabbi Feder, the Rishayim only would need to do tshuva, or... Who needs to do tshuva?
Oh, that's a good question. So let's transition then to the next part, because that's Rishayim. Okay, fine. So let a plague come and just get Rishayim, right? But that's not so simple, right? So that's something where it then says, but it starts with tzaddikim, right? Even though it seems to be like it's caused, if you will, because there are Rishayim in the world, it's saying it starts with tzaddikim. Right? So that's a good, hard to understand. Right? That's hard to understand. So at first the Gemara says, that's what Gemara starts with. So, but then the next price says that it starts the easier proposition, which is that once the permission is given to the destroyer to destroy, it doesn't differentiate between Tzaddik and Rishon. And not only that, it begins with Tzaddikim. So let's, before we get to the not only that part, it seems the more basic part is that once it's given permission, it doesn't differentiate between tzaddikim and rishayim. So even though on the one hand it only occurs because there are rishayim, at the same time it doesn't differentiate between tzaddikim and rishayim. So how do we understand that? And that's the question, I guess, of the justice, right? Of the justice question. So Leslie, I heard your point about thing is that if it's not done in this way, it might be too obvious and they take away people's free will. I'm not sure if that's true, but maybe it is. But it still doesn't quite address the justice question. Is if you're saying is that the Magepa happens because of Rishayim, then why is that fair or just to say that now it's not going to differentiate between Tzaddikim and Rishayim? Right?
It sounds like it's saying that it's... It is differentiating because it's giving mercy to the tzaddikim, because it's going to be too hard. Also, like, when it starts with a tzaddikim, then I think people looking at it are not going to get the lesson. They're going to get the opposite lesson. They're going to say it doesn't matter if people usually think of a bad thing happening to Rasha. We don't think, you know, Rasha are not thinking, you know.
Okay, but I'm asking, let's just, before we get to that, let's just first start with the part about that saying it doesn't differentiate between tzaddik and Rasha. Before we get to the part about the tzaddik being first, the Gemara seems to think that's an additional point. But the first thing it says is that it doesn't differentiate between a tzaddik and a Rasha. Right? So what's the sense of that? What would be the justice in that, saying it doesn't differentiate between tzaddik and a Rasha? After all, if he's a tzaddik, shouldn't it differentiate? And we're saying, after all, the Magepa only comes because of the Rishayim, right? So then why is it not differentiating? And also, is it saying that's it? Once there's a Negaf, that's it? No, Tzidkos doesn't do anything? Is that true? Is that true? It seems like there are, like, capitals of Tehillim, which there's specifically Tzadi Aleph, which Yoshev Tehillim talks about how Hashem protects the Tzadik. Is it true that in a Magepa there's zero protection? Is that really the case? It doesn't seem. The Pesukim seem to indicate that sometimes there is a protection for a Tzadik. Nega Leika Ba'alecha says that there will be 1,000 dead on your right hand and 10,000 on your left side and Hashem protects. Doesn't seem to be that. That's the message. When there's Magepa, there's fit. There's not all, right, all bets are off. But at the same time, it does seem to be saying it doesn't differentiate between the Tzadik and the Rasha. Right? So I know there's a few questions I'm asking. But what's the sense and the justice of not differentiating between the Tzadik and the Rasha if the Magepa is coming because of Tzadik? The Rasha, I'm sorry.
Rabbi Tater?
Yeah.
The RL. Maybe you can say that it's, in a way, it's not injustice because if you look at it from, like, a society point of view, tzaddikim should really be the leaders of the society or the nation or whatever, and they're really the ones who are supposed to, you know, teach people from right and wrong. And if there are Rishayim underneath their wing, then, or in their presence, then in a way it's kind of also our fault for not properly, I guess, educating them.
Right. Okay, good. Good. That's similar to what Larry's saying. Good. Good. Let me ask you something. Why does it say tzaddik? In a mouth of him, in tzaddik l'rasha, then are they really tzaddikim? If your thing is, in a sense, they're really at fault.
Right. So, good question. I think the difference is there's a difference from looking at it from a societal point of view and from an individual point of view. From an individual point of view, yeah, he is a tzaddik. You know, you can't really punish him for someone else's actions. However, because you're in a society, it's like we're all in this together, so to speak.
Right.
You know, it's like if you're neighbors with the Russia, you're going to get affected. You know, if you're...
Right.
Right.
I mean, that's just a thought. You could maybe take it further. Yeah, very good. Good. Well said. Yeah, someone else? Any other thoughts? Yeah. So, I mean, it seems to me like actually not distinguishing between tzaddik and rasha, like if Hashem is causing a punishment that's natural, like for example a magepa, then like it seems like normally
something like a Magepa doesn't distinguish. So, like, you sort of need an extra level of intervention for each individual tzaddik. It seems to me like it's more like the default to not
right.
distinguish.
I see. That's good. You mean you're addressing the fact that it could be that there might be an individual tzaddik who saves, but you're saying it's telling you the default.
That's what it sounds like to me.
Yeah. Okay, good. That's good. Yeah, very good. Okay.
I didn't understand that part about the default. Can you just explain that again?
Come on.
Yeah. I guess what I'm saying is that if Hashem is punishing the world using some sort of natural agent, like a plague or something else, then normally a plague doesn't distinguish based on someone's tzidkus. So, like, for each individual tzaddik, maybe Hashem would intervene, maybe not, but, like, the normal way that this kind of thing unfolds is not distinguishing.
Oh, I got it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good.
Could that be, just quick, to add on, could that be the, should that be the mindset of the tzaddik going through the situation? I mean, like, should that be one of his, maybe tshuva that he can work on? Because, you know, because he's the tzaddik, he should really be internalizing the situation. He should really, I guess, you know, view from that standpoint as well.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe. Okay. Yeah, good. Any other points?
Is the definition of a tzaddik, putting aside the quasi-philosophical approach of a responsibility in a society versus an individual tzaddik for himself, but is the definition of a tzaddik someone who is obligated to be a model or to teach others? Because if the answer is yes, then it would seem that no one can be a tzaddik if there's even one Russia in the world. Well, if the answer is,
I think it's, I don't know if it's a definition of a tzaddik, but it's one of the responsibilities I would think of every person to influence whoever they could. Now, to some extent, the person can only do what they could do. So, yeah, everyone has free will, right? You can't necessarily prevent people from doing bad. But to a degree that you could, you could.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, good. Any other points, questions, comments?
Rabbi Feder.
Yeah.
I think I have a proof for your communal responsibility of tzidkus, of the tzaddik. You see from Ore Miklot that they don't let the guy out of Ore Miklot until the Kohen Gadol dies.
Okay.
Why? Because Rashi says the reason why the guy killed accidentally was because the Kohen Gadol didn't take his responsibility of dispensing shalom and knowledge and things throughout the community.
Right.
So there you see an example of a person that's punished because of somebody else's lack of attentiveness to his communal duties.
Yeah. Yeah, good point. Good example. Okay, good. Okay, any other thoughts? Okay, so maybe let me just tie your thoughts together, but I mean, you're all saying excellent things. Just to summarize, I guess, is that there's different levels, you could say, of God's justice, of God's judgment. And the Rambam, when he talks about, like on Rosh Hashanah, talks about din in Hilchos Teshuva, he does describe there's a din on individuals, there's a din on the world, right? And maybe he mentions on community, on cities also, I think, I can't remember. But the point is that din doesn't only take place on an individual level. Man exists as an individual, but man exists as a society. And the Jewish people exist as individuals and as societies, and there's a world. And the din takes place on these different levels. Okay? But in a certain sense, like you might have conflict, right? Like you could have an individual who exists as an individual, and he might be a tzaddik, but yet he might exist in a society, which is a Rishon. Now, how could you ever apply din to societies if societies are made up of a lot of individuals and all those individuals are going to have different din, right? It would seem that the premise of a din on a society, a societal din, in a certain sense, blurs the distinctions between the individual members of the society. Because it's a din on the unit of the society. And we're saying is man exists as like a social creature, as a member of a city, of a town, of a yeshiva, of a society, of a Israel, of a world. And there's a phenomenon of a din on the society, on the world, on the city, on the town. And insofar as there's a din that way, and if there is a negative din against a society or a world, so then there's oftentimes a gzar din, a punishment, a method, it would seem, one good method, which is, so to speak, built into the laws of nature of carrying out a din on a society, is a magepa, right? It's a plague. Because plagues are, they attack a society, and they spread, and they're contagious, right? As opposed to individual diseases like, I don't know, whatever, a person could get a cancer or get some sort of heart attack or get hit by a car. I don't know. Those are like individualistic phenomenon. But a plague is a attack on a society. There are other attacks on society also, maybe war or a famine. It's not the only one, but it's one attack on society. It's a mashlis against the society. And arguably it's indicative that saying is there's you don't have a din on a society if not for the fact that the society contains Rishon. Okay? A society of tzaddikim isn't going to have a din on this. A society isn't going to have that din. The fact that there is an onesh against the society is indicative that society contains Rishon. But at the same time, it's not a din against 100 or 1,000 Rishayim. It's a din against the society. And as a society, if there are a lot of Rishayim, if there are Rishayim in the society, it's not just a failing of the individual, the individual Rishayim, but it's a failing on behalf of the society at large. An example, as besides the examples that were mentioned, is, for example, the Chet HaEgel. The Chet HaEgel, how many people sinned in the Chet HaEgel? How many were killed? In other words, the 3,000 people who they killed with a sword, and then there were Magepha, there were more. I don't know if it tells us how many, maybe 24,000, I don't remember. No, I don't know if this might be a problem. Whatever. The point is they ultimately, all the people who are involved in the Chet HaEgel, in one way or other, were killed, either through Magepha, or through a sword, or through the drinking of the water. Right? But the bottom line is, it's a scar on Klal Yisrael going forward. Why is it a scar on Klal Yisrael? After all of a sudden, everyone who worshipped was killed. But apparently, it's a state of the society. What did the society do? All the tzaddik, all the Roshan were killed. All the worship was killed. Apparently, the society had to stop it. And we as a nation allowed this to occur in our society, and that's the chet on the society. Maybe we didn't worship, but we allowed it to occur. And arguably, when you have a society which is corrupt and evil, you could, in a certain sense, blame the Roshan, the worst of the worst. But at the same time, it thrives in a society which allows it to thrive. Whoever, could someone hit mute, please? Whoever's got that background noise. So it exists in a society which allows it to exist. That's when rishus takes hold. So if you have a society which ultimately gets over the edge and deserves a magefa or some sort of a promise, that's indicative of failing of the society. And a failing of the society is a failing of the tzaddikim and the rishon. And therefore, it's saying is when a magefa comes, the nature of the onesh of a magefa doesn't differentiate between tzaddik and rasha, because the failing is, you can't point fingers to the rishonim and say, oh, those guys are the ones who failed. Because it's not those guys. Maybe it's those guys, in a sense, those are the rishonim and others are the tzaddikim, but it's not ma'aplin, because it's not a failing of individuals, it's a failing of society. And when you have a societal failing, it requires a societal onesh and societal tshuva, if you will, to overcome that. So yeah, I guess Ariel's point is true. Is insofar as a person's doing tshuva, you should think of the tshuva that we're doing for our own personal rishus and for our failure to help other people for not being rishon. That's all part of our collective communal responsibility. And the onesh is not mavchin bein tzadik l'rasha, because it's saying is, in a sense, the crime is a communal crime. But I think what Tamar said is good, is that does not mean, I don't think it means, based upon that Tehillim and other things, it doesn't mean that all Hashkacha is off, and there's no such thing as a tzaddik being set apart, cut out of the Magefa. That's not necessarily true either. It could be that an individual tzaddik who's, I don't know what a God's Cheshbon is, but an individual tzaddik who does set himself apart from the society, and really is Zocha, maybe God will spare him. I don't think it means Ein Malchus Tzadik L'Rasha. It means it's totally blind and God has no control. That's not true. God does have control, and there might be individual tzaddikim who God would separate. But yeah, I think that's what Tamar said, because the default is that the onesh is the onesh against the society, and therefore you can't just say every person who died, it means he's the Rasha. No, that's not true. The default is it does go against tzaddikim and Rishayim, but at the same time, that doesn't mean there could be a place for hashgacha, for divine providence protection, on behalf of individual tzaddikim. That might be the case. So, for example, I think a good analogy is we see this in, we see this, for example, by, let's say, the Mabul. So the Mabul was the society at large was evil, and the society at large was wiped out. But who was saved on the boat? So it was eight people, Noah and his wife and his sons and their wives, right? So who was the tzaddikim? So in a certain sense, you might say these are the eight tzaddikim, but the Pasuk says, so Noah, he says, Ki oscha ro'isi tzaddik lefanai v'dar hazeh, you alone I see as a tzaddik in this generation. And the Ramban, a few Rambans there say that in a sense, the din was a din against the tzibor. And the tzibor, everyone would have been wiped out, if not for Noach. Noach was the only one who basically warranted, he was the type of a tzaddik who warranted an intervention, a divine intervention to make a teva and to save him. And if not for Noach, his sons were not that type of tzaddikim. They weren't Rishayim, but they would have been the type of tzaddikim that would have been swept away with the world. It's only because of Noach. Noach was the type of a tzaddik who warranted to be differentiated and separated from the Onesh. And once Hashem made a teva, and he separated Noach, then he threw his sons got along with him. They were able to partake of it with him. But you see from the Ramban, there's like different types of tzaddik. His sons were tzaddikim, but not that type of a tzaddik. So in a Malcolm in Tzaddik Rasha means it's like it wouldn't differentiate between the world and Noach's son, even though they're tzaddikim. But at the same time, Noach himself, he was a type of a tzaddik, where he had a zechus which allowed him to, he was a tzaddik tamim, the Ramban points out, he was a perfect tzaddik, and for him, he was zechut to that. So there is still a realm of hashkacha. I don't think it turns off that realm, but it says, in general, the person has to beware, because it isn't Masa Mitzavik Rasha, and as it says by Mitzrayim, don't leave your house until night. That's why we have to be very careful of the laws of nature. For example, in a time like now, a person can't have a trust and an assumption that, hey, we're good, well, it's not going to happen to us. Even if we are good, it doesn't mean it's not going to happen to us. First of all, who knows how good we are? But second of all, even so, in a Masa Mitzavik Rasha, there is a force of nature out there which does, default setting is that it goes for whoever's in its path. So don't be in its path. Okay. So what about, let's if there's a question, if we can take a question, if not, we'll turn to the other part about going to the deacon first. But first, I need any questions. Okay. Okay. Okay, so someone who's doesn't have their mute on is like staticky and... That noise? Okay. So then the Gemara says, not only doesn't differentiate between tzaddikim and Rishayim, but it starts with the tzaddikim. Right? And Rabbi Yosef cried, and he says, really? The tzaddikim are so nothing? They're like Hevel, they're like nothing? That they're first? Right? So what was he thinking? Before we get to the Gemara's answer, that it's good for them. That's the Gemara's answer. But Rav Yosef didn't know that answer. So forget that answer. What was Rav Yosef's response? It sounds contradictory, because on the one hand he's saying, the statement is saying that tzaddikim are first. And he cries and says, really? So much so that the tzaddikim are like nothing, like Hevel, that they come first? Come first? That's not like nothing, that's coming first. What's the sense of them coming first? Before the Gemara knows the answer that tzaddikim come first, right? Before it knows that they're coming first as a chesed to them, how did Rav Yosef understand the statement and what was his crying about? Because, Michael, yeah?
Yeah, because maybe if you're saying that there's no hashkacha once the communal punishment, then like it should be equal to everyone. But once you're saying that tzaddikim are coming first, it seems like you're saying, specifically is
going to go. Okay, right. Okay, so you could say it sounds like, right. Right, you mean it sounds like it's saying is that not only that, but the tzaddikim it's targeting, as if they are the worst, right? Which is he's crying about. Okay, I hear that, but then why does it say, kulehai le'ein domen, so much so that they're like nothing, and Rashi says, kaloma lahevel chashuvim tzaddikim, are they like nothing? She called them the promise that they're first. What does it mean? Like they're like nothing. It's not they're nothing. it sounds like it's saying is that they're the worst. Right? It's targeting them first. So why is Rashi saying, and it's based on the translation of the Gemara, it almost sounds like it's saying is they're like nothing. Right? So I think maybe, it's a little bit subtle in the lesson here, but I think maybe the way, I'm a little bit interpreting it, not plain shot here, but the way Rav Yosef interpreted it, it doesn't make sense to say, at least in his mind, unless you come on to the answer that it's helping the tzaddikim. It doesn't make sense to say that it's targeting them first. Why would it target them first? They're not the main perpetrators, but maybe the way he interpreted it is to mean, when it says that tzaddikim are first, it doesn't mean that they are necessarily first, but it means that they can be first. In other words, you might say, look, the din is a din against Rishon. The din against Rishon, it's going to go to Rishon first, because they're, after all, they're the root cause, they're the problem, but since it's a magefa, it's going to naturally spread to tzaddikim, and Hashem is not going to shield the tzaddikim from the magefa. That's what you might have thought. Eino mavchem in tzadik v'rasha, you would have interpreted to mean, look, Hashem's punishing the Rishon, but after all, the Rishon, the tzaddikim also are at fault, and therefore it would spread to the tzaddikim as well. Watch out. But if it's saying as it could start from them, means, this is the way Rav Yosef interpreted it, is that, no. It's not that it goes to the Rishon and naturally might spread to tzaddikim, but rather, it simply doesn't differentiate. It could start at the tzaddik, it could start at the rasha. They're like nothing. Basically saying is once there's a din against the tzibor, even though the din is only going to happen because of the rasha'im, basically the tzaddik, the rasha, they're basically 100% equivalent. And it could just as well start from the tzaddik. Don't think it starts at a rasha and then spreads to the tzaddik. No. It basically is a din on the tzibor. The tzibor is a unit. And in the unit is totally undifferentiating between tzaddik and rasha'im. And that's what Rav Yosef is crying about. Because he would have thought, look, at the very least, I understand when Rishon or Rishon, it could spread to Tzaddikim, because Tzaddikim have a secondary responsibility. I understand that. But to say that it could even start from the Tzaddikim, that means that once the Magefa comes in the din, it totally equates, no matter the big Tzaddik and the big Rasha, they basically become equal in the eyes of the din. That, to him, was saddening. To say that it extends, okay, fine, that's bad. But to say that it's equal, that to him was shocking. So he interpreted, he thought it can't possibly mean it goes to them first, because intrinsically first, because that's how does that make any sense? But he thought it must mean that it could go to them first, which means that they're equivalent. That's what he cried. He says, really, they're the same? So what did he answer? What did it answer? So they answered, no. It really is, it does mean first. It doesn't mean they're equal, it means it's first. That it does target them first. Okay? It targets them first in specific, but that's not because they're the worst, on the contrary. That's because they're the best. Right? And it means they are the best, and as such, they're spared the worst of it. So yes, it does go to them also, but at the same time, it's done in a way which has rachamim for the tzaddik and mercy for the tzaddikim in it, that it could eradicate them first, so they don't have to partake and witness the terrible, terrible state which occurs to the nation or to the world. So, what about? I think it was Sippy's question. Is on the one hand, it sounds like it's saying it's not mavzen, doesn't differentiate between them. But now all of a sudden, it sounds like it's saying it is. It's specifically targeting the tzaddikim first, right?
I'm sorry, what's the problem now?
Question is Sippy's question, is on the one hand it said that once the Negev comes, it doesn't differentiate between tzaddik and rasha. And then you're saying is that it specifically goes for the tzaddikim first, and as a chesed to them. So apparently it does differentiate between the tzaddik and the rasha.
Oh, because the chesed to them?
Yeah, the chesed to them, right?
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, I mean, you can't. You still can't deny their tzitzis. I mean, in a way, it doesn't differentiate them by getting the megefa, but just because they get it, it doesn't necessarily mean that they can't be differentiated by the effects of it.
Right.
How fast they get it, I mean.
Right.
Sort of justice here.
Yeah, good, right. It's saying it's not like it sounds like. It's qualifying it. And he says it's not mavkam, it's either with Rasha. It doesn't mean that that's it, all bets are off, and that, like that's what Yosef was crying about. It doesn't mean, look, Tzadik Rasha is 100% equal. Once Magefa comes, then it's basically just a free-for-all. That's not the case. That's what it sounds like. Look, Hashem just turns off his differentiation between Tzadik and Rasha. They're 100% equivalent. Saying, no, that's not the case. It's saying it is a communal din, and the din is against the Tzibor, and it could be a Magef, which could go against everybody, and Hashem isn't going to make a teva for all the Tzadikim to be able to escape on it. That's true. But it doesn't mean that Hashem isn't fine-tuning the Negev, if you will, in a way which considers the fact that Tzadikim are there, and he might shield them, protect them, give them a Gefa in a way which will, you know, hit them less than the Rishon. So, like, this is one example, is that it gets them first, but I think it indicates to you just a klal, that even though there's a Magefa and a din against the Tzibor, Hashem's din is subject, he's using a tool which goes against Tzadik and Rasha, and it's not necessarily going to just turn corners and avoid a Tzadik who's in the path. At the same time, there is a measure of, you know, I guess, direction, control, hashkacha, that Hashem spares the Tzadik the worst of it. The worst of it, in general. Of course, we don't know how and when and the particulars, but the thing is, it doesn't mean that now Tzadik and Rasha are equivalent in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's eyes, which is what Rav Yosef thought it was saying, and that would have been very, very sad, that once there's a din against the Tzibor, then that's it, Tzadik and Rasha are 100% equal. But that's what Abai is saying, no. It's not quite saying that. It's on the contrary. It's saying it gets the Tzadik first, means it doesn't differentiate between them, means qualitatively it's going to get the Tzadikim as well. And it doesn't, again, there's not necessarily miracles to stop it from getting Tzadikim. But the quantities, the degrees, where it goes, how it goes, who it goes first, that's not the same miracle. That's like small little shifts in the way that it occurs, which could benefit Tzadikim more than Rishon. And that, it's saying, is still the case. Despite that, it's not a total Hester Punim to Tzadikim, total turning away, that it's now there's nothing. There's no reality of the Tzadik in the eyes of God. That would have been worse, but he's saying that's not the case. Okay? Any questions?
Yeah, Rabbi Spader?
Yeah.
Hi, Sai. I think I missed, there's some gap in my understanding going back to your example with the Cheta Ego.
Yeah.
I thought we were discussing it in terms of, you know, if society gets judged because of Rishus, sort of society as a unit gets punished, but then I thought, but you were saying, went on to point out how everyone involved with the chet died. But then, how is that an example? Because the people who were involved died, and the people who weren't involved didn't die. So it seemed like it wasn't necessarily the entire unit being punished.
Oh. Well, I mean, Klal Yisrael going forward, was punished. Like, for instance, like the Pasuk says, and like it's interpreted, is that any time Klal Yisrael is punished, there's like a little bit of the Cheta Egel in it. So, at least in that instance, there was a differentiation in the punishment to the people who actually bowed down or killed, and other people were not killed, but there was like a lasting onus in it. So that's, but I don't know if that's necessarily an example of my, I know I was drawing an analogy, but I don't know if that's this, necessarily this same thing as like a Magefa.
Okay.
You know,
but
there is. But the point is still the same: is that just because there's not Malchin, it doesn't mean it in the fullest extent of the word. That there's zero differentiation. It means Magefa is there is a din against the Tzibor, which could extend to Tzadikim and Rishayim. Even people who don't deserve it intrinsically could end up getting it. But at the same time, what this thing is saying is that Tzadikim first is showing is that there is differentiation in some extent in the fine details. There still might be some differentiation. And, you know, but, you know, the truth is each example, another example to consider would be of this collective justice and the justice society versus individuals is the example of Saddam. That's, I think, partially what's going on with Avram's, so to speak, discussions, negotiations with the Kadosh Baruch Hu is to what degree, how many individuals are necessary to save the society. But, I mean, these are obviously big matters, and the subject matter of din, of the individuals and society, there's a lot of, it's interesting to study each of these examples, again, the Noach and Saddam and the Egel, and they're all a little bit different, and they're all, you know, they're not all, even though I'm just confused bringing them up as examples, of course, you know, every case is a little bit different, and there are subtleties, and, you know, I'm just trying to draw some general points from them, but your point is well taken. The Egel's not exactly analogous in that regard.
Yeah, okay, thank you. Yeah, I don't want to seem like I'm trying to put you on the spot. Sorry,
No. Good question. No, I'm not. All good.
Okay, and thank you. Wasn't there the fact that there was a malach that went with Nei B'nai Israel instead of Hashem as a consequence of the Egel?
Yes, that was a consequence of the Egel. Yep, that's true. And the crown.
That's Jerry's point.
Yeah, and the crown still.
This is like there's a lot of different types of magiva. The photo can happen for different reasons, like that we can't just group everything into the circle.
For sure. I mean, this Gemara is joined general categories, and there are general ideas to be discovered. Yet at the same time, of course, everything in Torah, everything needs its own individual analysis. But at the same time, it doesn't mean you can't have certain general principles, but which of course have to be tailored to each and every instance. Yeah, I mean, I would just mention, I'm not going to do it, but the Gemara continues and talks about different things, about like in the time of Magefa, it says you should stay inside, and it says you might think even if it's scary inside and you need company outside, still stay inside, because the Bayis closes windows in Magefa times. It's like very much, I feel, if anyone wants to look further, there's like another Amud worth of Gemara, which is different, you know, if you will, guidelines about how to act in Magefa, which are very analogous to, well, basically the current CDC recommendations and all that. It's like they knew about Magefa. You know, we don't know about it, and we have to, like, rediscover it. But in the Gemara, you'll see a lot of the things are basically, you know, still true today, and they didn't know the science, obviously, but they knew the phenomenon, and they knew ways of dealing with it, and you know, it is interesting to see that in the further this Gemara gets into specific treatments and dealings with Magefa. So if anyone wants to look further, that's on Samach, you know, further on Samach on the Beis and Bava Kama. It's very interesting. If anyone looks at it and has any questions, I'd love to discuss. All right. So unless there are any other questions, I guess we'll stop here. Anyone else?
Rabbi Feder, could I just have one last quick... Oh, go ahead.
Yeah.
Oh, do you want another question?
No, you go first, please.
So I was wondering, is the plague intended to wipe out Rishayim, like, or is it intended to, like, punish them into doing teshuva, like, wake them up, or is it to, like, get rid of them?
This plague you're asking, or plagues in general?
I'm sorry, what?
Did you say this plague or plagues in general?
In general.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Maybe both. Maybe sometimes, okay. you know, in general, as the Navi says, Hashem doesn't want the mace to die, but rather he wants him to do tshuva. So that's in general, Midas Hashem, is Hashem has, you know, slow to anger, and he wants people to do tshuva, but sometimes that's not, you know, not working. So, you know, arguably, like in the Tochacha, it says, if we double down, if we don't take lessons, then Hashem makes it worse, and if we do, then Hashem stops it. So it seems in general Hashem wants us to do tshuva, but if that doesn't work, then sometimes it gets worse, and sometimes it gets worse, you know? So it does seem like there is a message, but, I mean, sometimes there are people who might die before they get a chance to do tshuva. So,
yeah. Thank you.
Sure. Yeah, Larry, you had another question?
Yeah, so I'm glad that question was just asked, because it's related to the one that I'm going to ask.
Yeah.
And, you know, I guess I don't fully appreciate what a Russia is. I think of a Russia, and perhaps incorrectly so, as like a real evil or somebody who completely denigrates Torah versus a guy who or a woman who is a Torah observant person generally, but doesn't eat kosher, or doesn't fully keep Shabbos. Because if a Russia is really just a really bad person, is it unrealistic to, I mean, is it almost contra the definition of a Russia to say do tshuva? An observant Jew knows we're all fallible, we all sin, no matter how righteous we are, and we know that we ought to do tshuva. Somebody who's just a bad guy who does everything wrong, is it realistic? If he were to do tshuva, then he wouldn't be a Russian in the first place. Right?
I hear your question, but I think, for example, in the story of Yonah, I'm not sure how much you know about it, but Jonah and the whale and all that, there was this evil society, Nineveh, massive city, and God said in, I forget how many days, 30 days, the whole city was going to be wiped out, destroyed by God, because they were so evil. And God sent Jonah to give them a prophecy to tell them about their evil ways. And sure enough, they were evil, but they all repented, and they were saved. So, I mean, that's the Torah maintains that every person has free will, and even if a person is evil, they have the capacity to do tshuva, unless in rare cases where God prevents a person from doing tshuva. But the Torah holds a person has free choice, and even if they're evil, if they could get a wake-up call, and if they so move in that direction, they're not terminally evil. Evil is a decision which a person makes and a decision that a person could undo. Mm-hmm. So each person on their level, each person, Tzadik, Rasha, everyone on their level is fallible, and everyone is subject to moving in the proper direction, wherever they're at. And this is a call for people to do that, each on their own level.
All right, thanks.
Yeah. Okay, good. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you, everyone, for joining us. Have a good night.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you.